Today we're reading from the Bhagavad Gita, 4th chapter, text number 6. This is quite a well-quoted verse. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Ajopi san avyayatma. Ajopi san avyayatma. Bhutanam ishvaro pisan. Bhutanam ishvaro pisan. Prakritim swam adishtaya. Prakritim swamadishtaya. Sambhavam yatmamayaya. Sambhavam yatmamayaya. Ajopi san avyayatma. Bhutanam ishvaropi san. Prakritim swam adishtaya. Sambhavam yatmamayaya. Ajopi san avyayatma. Bhutanam ishvaropi san. Prakritim swamadishtaya. Sambhavam yatmamayaya. Ajopi san avyayatma. Bhutanam ishvaropi san. Prakritim swamadishtaya. Sambhavam yatmamayaya. Ajopi san avyayatma. Bhutanam ishvaropi san. Prakritim swamadishtaya. Sambhavam yatmamayaya. Ajaha, unborn. Api, although. Sam, being so. Avyaya, without deterioration. Atma, body. Bhutanam, of all those who are born. Ishvaraha, the Supreme Lord. Api, although. San, being so. Prakritim, in the transcendental form. Swam, of myself. Odishtaya, being so situated. Sambhavami, I do incarnate. Atmamayaya, by my internal energy. Although I am unborn, and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. Repeat to me, please. Although I am unborn, and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord has spoken about the peculiarity of his birth. Although he may appear like an ordinary person, he remembers everything of his many, many past births, whereas a common man cannot remember what he has done even a few hours before. If someone is asked what he did exactly at the same time one day earlier, it would be very difficult for a common man to answer immediately. He would surely have to dredge his memory to recall what he was doing exactly at the same time one day before. And yet, men often dare claim to be God or Krishna. One should not be misled by such meaningless claims. Actually, this is referring to the questions of Arjuna. Remember, Arjuna asks, he says, the sun god Vivasvan is seated by birth to you in text 4. How am I to understand that you instructed this science to him? This was Arjuna's question. And then Krishna says, many births we have done, and I can remember all of them, but you cannot. So here, Prabhupada is making a comment here that what do we remember? How much do we remember? Let's put it to the test. What were you doing this time yesterday, exactly this time? Sorry? Hare Krishna. What were you doing at 1:30 yesterday? Lying up, what do you say? You're waiting for a plane in the airport. What was the person in front of you wearing? So this is true. What do we remember? We don't remember anything. We have to really think. What was I doing 1/2 hour ago? What was the conversation I was having? What did he say? What did she say? What did I say? We don't remember anything. So you can recognize this. Deva Prabhupada says, one should not be misled by such meaningless claims. People say they're God. Now, in the West, we don't come across it very often. I don't remember anyone ever saying that they're God in the West. Anyone have an experience of anyone claiming to be God in the West? Sorry? He was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here, but what is the mean? It's a meaningless claim. It's like someone walks in here and says, "I'm the Prime Minister of Holland, Belgium." We'd say, "What foolishness! What nonsense!" So even on a kind of mundane level like that, or someone just walked in, "I'm the mayor of your local town," we'd call it meaningless. Get out, out. But yet, people not only claim to be the Prime Minister of Belgium, but they're claiming to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here Prabhupada says it's meaningless. They can't even remember what they did the day before. So here, Lord Krishna, he can remember everything, not just 5 minutes ago or 1/2 hour ago, but for all time. And we can't even conceive of that. We can't even conceive of that period of time. How long has this earth been in around? Anybody know? The day of Brahma. A day of Brahma is what they say, it's 4,132,000 years times 1,000 times 2. That's a day and a night of Brahma. He lives for 30 days such nights, 12 months such months, a year, and then 100 years. This is the life of Brahma. So this, what I understand is that we're currently Brahma is about 50 years old, and it's about half a day or something. That's why I've heard these things. So what do we remember about all this? How can we conceive of all this period of time? So how can anyone claim to be God? What do they remember? How much do people know? So here is the meaningless. It's absolutely meaningless. It's like a child said, I'm going to capture the moon or something. It's as meaningless as that. So Prabhupada writes here, then again, the Lord explains his prakriti or his form. Prakriti means nature, as well as swarupa or one's own form. The Lord says that he appears in his own body. He does not change his body, as the common living energy changes from one body to another. And this is extraordinary. The conditioned soul may have one kind of body in the present birth, but he has a different body in the next birth. In the material world, the living entity is no fixed body, but transmigrates from one body to another. The Lord, however, does not do so. Again, the word is aja, unborn. Although I'm unborn, I do so without deterioration. Actually, this purport is a fantastic purport. So the Lord's unborn, but yet he appears to be born. You can go to the birth site of Krishna. We celebrate it, Janmashtami, the eighth day of Krishna's Janma, his birth, his appearance. So it seems like he did appear. But it says here, he isn't born. He didn't change his body. He didn't come again in another body. He was the same Krishna. Now, we hear this many times. We may have one kind of body in the present birth, but we're going to have a different body in the next birth. What we're attached to now, what we identify with ourselves now, in a few more years will be gone. And it'll all be history. Someone might record it somewhere. Someone may remember it for a short period of time. How much we remember our grandfather or our great-grandfather? Who remembers them? Nobody remembers them. Maybe it's written down in some record somewhere. He was born a certain day, passed away on a certain date, and that's it, a little entry somewhere. A whole life of thoughts and thinking and hopes and aspirations and plans, gone. We'll wisp in the wind. So in a few more years, 50, 60, 70 years, we'll be gone. And we'll be in another body. But Krishna doesn't do like that. He doesn't change like that. He's always eternal. Aja is unborn, although he appears to be born. The Lord, however, does not do so. Whenever he appears, he does so in the same original body by his internal potency. In other words, Krishna appears in this material world in his original eternal form with two hands holding a flute. He appears exactly in his eternal body, uncontaminated by this material world. Although he appears in the same transcendental body and is Lord of the universe, it still appears that he takes his birth like an ordinary living entity. Here the Sanskrit is Ishvara, Bhutanam Ishvaro Pisan, of those who are born. Now, in our Western education, we are taught that the only place you find things born is on earth. That's what they say. No, nothing else is born anywhere else. They don't talk about those things. We're very earth-centric. We're earthlings. We have an earth-centered focus. But when this is saying Bhutanam Ishvaro Pisan, it means everywhere in the universe where things are born, things are appear. These are concepts that are very difficult. If you mention this to anyone, you go home, your friends, do you know what they said in the Hare Krishna Center? They said that there's living entities all over the universe. They'll say, they're nuts. That's what they'll say. They'll say that we're nuts because we believe this. We believe that there's life everywhere. Ajit Chopra mentions that. He gives a simple logic one time. Wherever you go in this planet, you find life. There's no way you go on this planet and you won't find life. I was talking to one lady. She was from Japan. She came to the manor one time to learn how to work with bulls, oxen. And she was a, what do you call it? I can't remember the technical term. Some kind of deep sea geologist. And she was talking about these germs or something that live on the mouth of a kind of volcano at the bottom of the ocean. It's interesting because her study, she's never been there. Somehow they study these things that they can't go there. They can't go there with a submarine or something. Anyway, she's talking about these little things that live there on the mouth of a volcano. Then you go to the South Pole and you find penguins and you find birds and things and whales and stuff. And you go in the desert and you find lizards and things living in the sand and camels. So on this earth, wherever you go, you find life. So Prabhupada used that. He kind of gave a logical explanation. Wherever you go on this earth, you find life. So similarly, everywhere you go in life, in the planets, you find also life. He asked them one time when they were first going to the moon, and Prabhupada said, "What do they find there?" And they said, "Well, they didn't find anything." Then Prabhupada said, "Then they didn't go," because we find that from the scriptures, it mentions that. For example, suppose you've been somewhere. Supposing you've been to the island of Bali and you write about it, your life in Bali. And then someone comes and says, "Well, I went to Bali and I didn't find anything there at all. It was only sand." You can say, "Well, then you didn't go." You know they didn't go because you wrote about it. So in the scriptures, people have written about it. They've been there. They know people who have been there who describe it. And they describe various living beings on various planets. So we sometimes are challenged by these things, that in our scriptures they talk about things that are beyond our, they're beyond our normal Western education, and we're weighing up, well, which is true? Do I believe the school system, or do I believe these holy books? We're constantly having to weigh this. And here, this is a concept: someone who's born but actually not born, well, what do I believe here? What is the answer? So therefore we have to challenge this. We have to probably use the point pariprashnena, which means, like you have parikram. Every morning we go around Tulsi, we do a parikram, stepping around Tulsi. So pari means prashnena. You ask questions from all sides. You have to study it threadbare, really understand it, really believe it. And therefore, Prabhupada would ask the question, he kind of gave an example, is it true? Is this true? Is it true that these living entities are all over the planets? I went to an interesting site one time. It's called marsanomalies.com. You can go there on the internet and have a look at it. Very interesting. It's interesting because one of the conspiracy is that when these kind of satellite things went around Mars and they took various photographs, the official publication pictures don't show anything. They just show basically deserts and mountains and stuff. But then this particular website, the guy starts analyzing, he starts showing you certain things that actually are there, but they're not clearly seen. So one particular site, you can see how certain things have been airbrushed out by the computer. And then he takes you to one particular site on this, the Mars, and then he changes the colour and the light and the shade, and suddenly you start seeing a city with kind of rectangular, like kind of chessboard structures and buildings, and then you go for all these things, you find all these amazing things there. So the controversy is that even if they do find some truth, they won't tell you, because they don't want you to know those things, because it's going to alter how you think. If you suddenly think that actually there is life in every single universe, then you start thinking, well, actually, we're not so important after all. We're not as important as we thought. We are not the center of the universe. We're just simply other inhabitants of this universe. So the truth is that there is living beings all over the universe, and there's actually so much evidence for it. There's so many people who have experiences of peoples like ourselves, and it's actually not just one person. So some might say, I mean, for example, these extraterrestrial people or UFOs or whatever name they call it, it's not just one type of exchange, there's so many different types of people. I mean, you'd expect that. Like, on, you know, if you came to the planet Earth, you wouldn't just find one kind of person. You know, you can more or less look at each individual country, and people have got very different characteristics. Some people are short, some people are tall, some people are black, some people are white, some people are yellow. So similarly, in the universe, why would that be any different? Why would there be no variety in the universe? So you find the actual evidence there is supports this worldview that there is living beings everywhere, not just on this earth. But you have to look a little bit. You won't find it in the general textbooks. They say we didn't find anything on the moon. There's nothing there. But yet Prabhupada gives example that the moon is a source of, and people know that. They know that the moon is a source of food. There's so much evidence to show that the cycle of the moon increases crops grow by it. So here, Bhutanamishvaro Pisan, that Lord Krishna is not just God here. He's not just the supreme controller of planet Earth. He is the supreme controller of the whole universe. And we may have heard this story one time where Srila Prabhupada was talking to Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And then Prabhupada was saying, he was talking about how Lord Mahavishnu relies on the causal ocean, and then as he kind of breathes out all these universes, leave his pores of his skin or his nostrils, described sometimes, and he described that there's millions, billions of these universes, and then each universe, the Mahavishnu expands again as the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and then from this Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, all these millions of planets are manifested, and there's one particular planet, and in this planet there's one particular country called America, and in America there's one little city called whatever it was, and in the middle of that city there's one person called Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Goswami thinks is very important. So we have this very minuscule view of reality. What do we know? We can't even see what beyond this room. But there's billions of living entities living and dying even on this planet Earth. What to speak of all the planets in this universe? What to speak of all the universes in the cosmos? Not the cosmos, in the whole creation. And that's only a little dark bit in the total reality. So this Krishna, who is actually the Ishvara of all these things, he appears on Earth. And it's a very amazing thing. Therefore, Ajopi son of Ayatma, Bhutanam Ishvaropi San. I am unborn and I am the Supreme Lord of everything. Now, here we go on. Although he appears in the same transcendental body and is Lord of the universe, it still appears that he takes his birth like an ordinary living entity. And although his body does not deteriorate like a material body, it still appears that Lord Krishna grows from childhood to boyhood and from boyhood to youth. So this is a question we may ask. Well, yeah, hang on a minute. You're saying that Krishna's God, yet he was born. He had a mother and a father. We hear about the persecution. His older brothers were killed. You can visit that place. There's a place that they say is where the pastime happened. You can go there today. And we hear about it. He had childhood pastimes, baby pastimes, childhood pastimes, youth pastimes. It actually appears like he's like us. He's growing older. Then Prabhupada says, but astonishingly enough, he never ages beyond youth. People like that age of youth. People don't want to get older. I think men like to be about 25. It's a kind of good. You're in the most strong mentally, physically. It's a kind of prime of the life. I think probably with ladies though it starts at 18. I know I've got two daughters and they're kind of looking forward to looking older to the age of 18, and after that they want to look younger. That's what I like my daughter there. Anyway, but for a youth, for a man, 20-25 Prabhupada says there. So Krishna, you don't find him looking any older than that. So he goes this cycle of birth to youth and that's it, doesn't age anymore. So that's astonishing. Do you ever know anyone like that? Sometimes you find people who seem to look very young, but they're still showing signs of old age. My God, who the hell was that person? And especially devotees, when they live a very pure life, they don't seem to age the same way. Sometimes devotees like to shave their heads because they look younger. Anyway, but they're not looking younger, there's an appearance. But Krishna actually didn't, not only did he not, he actually didn't look any younger. That's right, he didn't look any older. He just kind of stopped aging it. Now that's astonishing. So this is another sign of his extraordinariness. At the time of battle of Kurukshetra, he had many grandchildren at home. Or in other words, he had sufficiently aged by material calculations. Still, he looked just like a young man, 20 or 25 years old. It's really the kind of, you could say, a topic of some Hollywood movie. They might think of something like this. We never see a picture of Krishna in old age because he never grows old. And never grows old like us, although he is the oldest person in the whole creation, past, present, and future. The oldest person. We can't even comprehend how old Krishna is. I heard a story many years ago, I can't remember where it came from, but there was one man and he wanted a benediction of living for a long life, but he forgot to ask for a youthful life. So he had a long life and eventually his whole body deteriorated and he was kept in a jar. And Brother sometimes writes, he said, what's the point of having a long life like a tree? And a tree is a long life. What's the value of such a long life? Now, we can't comprehend how long Krishna has been existing. We can't comprehend such a vast period of time. In modern history, it goes back, 50,000 years? They say that humans like ourselves have been around for about 50,000 years. Another crookedness. Somebody listened to lectures by Drutakarma. I don't know if you've ever heard some of his stuff. You can find it YouTube. You can hear some of his lectures. And he's revealing some of the archaeological discoveries. And they find that there's a mine somewhere in South Africa, and they find these spheres, and these spheres, there's thousands of them apparently, locked into the wall of this mine. And these spheres have these etchings on them. So just like you have jewelry, you might put some fancy grooves on it. This indicates that people like ourselves were around. Well, they say this rock strata is 2 billion years old. So there are people like us going back 2 billion years. And it's interesting because that corresponds with the day of Brahma. The day of Brahma. Brahma lives for 1 day is 4 billion years. We're about 12 o'clock in his day. So there's been 2 billion years this Lord Brahma's this day. So anyway, there's some awkward evidence that goes back as far back as that. But 2 billion years is nothing. For us, it's like, my God, how can you comprehend? We live, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 years? We can't even comprehend of that. And our history only goes back 50,000 years or thereabouts. Modern people like ourselves, they say, have only been around 10,000 years. You read this stuff. So we're not equipped to comprehend with such vast periods of time. So Krishna, not only was he around 2 billion years ago, he's been around since the beginning of time. So it makes it even more extraordinary. He hasn't aged. I mean, being from a Christian background, my contact with God was, an old man with a beard. You weren't quite sure what he could do, what he couldn't do. He basically wasn't so attractive in that sense. But here, the contact of Krishna is, he's ever youthful. He doesn't age. Doesn't go beyond that period of time. So not is he the oldest person, okay, that's fine. He's the oldest person since time began, but he's not going to be the oldest person in the future. Someone's going to outlive him. But here he says, not only in the past, but in the future also. There'll never ever be anyone who lives as long as old as Lord Krishna. Neither his body nor his intelligence ever deteriorates or changes. Now, we can't comprehend that. We know in our own life how our intelligence develops, and we know how, as you get later on in life, how your intelligence becomes a bit more cloudy. Things aren't quite so sharp. You don't pick things up quite so much, especially when it comes to technology. You have to ask your kids to do stuff for you sometimes. But Krishna's intelligence never deteriorates or changes. He's always perfectly the most intelligent in the whole creation. Therefore, it's clear that in spite of his being in the material world, he is the same unborn eternal form of bliss and knowledge, changeless in his transcendental body and intelligence. Factually, his appearance and disappearance is like the sun's rising, moving before us, and then disappearing from our eyesight. When the sun is out of sight, we think that the sun is set, and when the sun is before our eyes, we think that the sun is on the horizon. Actually, the sun is always in its fixed position, but owing to our defective, insufficient senses, we calculate the appearance and disappearance of the sun in the sky. This is a very common example of understanding the incarnations of Krishna. So this purport gives you very important tools of how to explain Krishna's appearance. And because Lord Krishna's appearance and disappearance are completely different from that of any ordinary common living entity, it is evident that he is eternal, blissful knowledge by his internal potency, and he is never contaminated by material nature. The Vedas also confirm that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is unborn, yet he still appears to take his birth in multi-manifestations. The Vedic supplementary literatures also confirm that even though the Lord appears to be taking his birth, he is still without change of body. In the Bhagavatam, he appears before his mother as Narayan with four hands and the decorations of the six kinds of full opulences. His appearance in his original eternal form is his causeless mercy bestowed upon the living entities so that they can concentrate on the Supreme Lord as he is, and not on mental concoctions or imaginations which the impersonalist wrongly thinks the Lord's form to be. The word Maya or Atma Maya refers to the Lord's causeless mercy according to the Vishva Kosha dictionary. The Lord is conscious of all of his previous appearances and disappearance, but a common living entity forgets everything about his past body as soon as he gets another body. He is the Lord of all living entities because he performs wonderful and superhuman activities while he is on this earth. Therefore, the Lord is always the same absolute truth and is without differentiation between his form and self, or between his quality and body. A question may now be raised as to why the Lord appears and disappears in this world. This is explained in the next verse. So sometimes people say that there can't be this is kind of talking about reincarnation a little bit here, that sometimes people argue that we don't believe in reincarnation because I don't remember my previous life. But here, Prabhupada points out that the living entity, he forgets everything about his previous body. Now, one time I heard a very interesting example why that is the case. We may say, well, actually, I would like to know everything. If I could remember all my previous lives, then it would make me more serious. We may say like that. But actually, if we could remember everything, and we could see how we're punished for our previous actions we did, it may take away your ability to act independent. So in one sense, the forgetfulness is Krishna's mercy upon us to fulfill our ambition to live independently and separate from him. But when we become intelligent and we may start inquiring, then we can understand, actually I'm suffering now, the scriptures say, because of things that I did. So the fact that we forget is not, it doesn't mean it didn't happen. Just like, what's our earliest memory in life? What's your earliest memory? How old were you? Three. And yourself? Four. Four. So what happened before that? Did we live? Did we exist? So we don't remember. Doesn't mean it didn't happen. So similarly, just because we don't remember a previous life, doesn't mean it doesn't happen. We change. We forget. We're allowed to think this is our only life. So we can get right into it. But Krishna's not like that. He doesn't forget his previous births. He knows everything, every single birth he had, and every birth to come. So we have to finish at 8:15. Any questions or points? Please. The way it was explained is that because you have independence, but you feel that you have fresh choices. If you, for example, if you slap someone and you immediately felt the slap on your face, you ain't going to slap them, because you immediately recognize the action as a reaction. So if you could clearly see that by your actions at one time you're receiving a reaction, then you wouldn't be able to act independently. You'd be think, oh my God, you'd be forced to comply in that sense. So that's how it was explained to me. I haven't, I don't recall anything specifically, a verse to support that, but that's how it was explained. It enabled you to live and see yourself as, again, at the center of the universe. Yeah, how many things do we regret in this life? Things that we've done. Oh my God, I wish I hadn't done that. Imagine everything that you'd ever did. How traumatized you'd be. And we've done everything. All the sins it's probably possible to commit, we've probably done them, some form or other. Whatever desires we've had has been fulfilled in some form or other. You know, animal species, they're always fearful. Imagine living like that, always in fear. Someone's going to come and eat me the next minute. So how could you live with those kind of tortures? So forgetfulness, in that sense, is a blessing. And sometimes we find that when people have had a very traumatic experience, they blot it out. They can't remember it. So it kind of enables them to function in that sense. So I appreciate your sharing that view. Any other questions, points? Okay, thank you very much for your attention. Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki. Well, we're all going to hear the next verses. Yuge. I myself appear millennium after millennium, and that seems to refer to each yuga. You could say in the next verse 8, millennium after yuge, millennium after millennium. This doesn't specifically spell out how long. I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So it's not articulated in this purport what that term is. But you've got to go two purports later and then probably use the word millennium again in verse 8. And he says, yuge, every yuga. Yuga after yuga, he appears and he appears like that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Coming. Stay tuned. Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna.